It is now my pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, Susan Rothfuss. Susan is a life coach, consultant, and the author, speaker and author of a book entitled Breathe Into Wisdom. We welcome Susan back again this evening and look forward to hearing about attracting abundance. Please give Susan a warm welcome.
Nice to be back with all of you. Thank you, Mary, for inviting me to come. It's been quite a week, hasn't it? Or maybe 10 days for you folks. In lots of ways. Not just nationally, but certainly in your own church home experience. So let's move our focus from out there to in here for just a few minutes. I imagine there are many places in your life that are filled with abundance. Maybe family, friends, community, the fellowship. Maybe you enjoy an abundance of material things as well. Or maybe you have an abundantly healthy lifestyle that's filled with nutritious food and a body that loves to move. Maybe your home or garden in other seasons are an important part of abundance in your life. Your work, your bank balance, your volunteering may be abundant. And I'd like to ask you to bow your head and close your eyes right now and breathe deeply in through your nose and slowly out through your mouth. Once again, breathe in and breathe out. I'd like you to think about something your heart yearns for. Something that seems to be outside of your grasp. Breathe in and out. The universe is listening to your words and thoughts. Our energy and desires are all part of the energy right here in this room. Breathe in gently and breathe out slowly. Remember, we are simply humans being in this world, and the universe is here to listen, to support, to supply whatever we need to follow our individual paths. Breathe in, breathe out. Choose your words carefully as you state your desire. Use positive words. The universe doesn't understand negatives. Breathe in. Breathe out. And again, I ask you to let the universe know what it is you yearn for positively. Envision it. Feel it. Breathe in. Breathe out. Know that it is already yours across all time and space. Allow it into your being. And one last time, breathe in slowly and breathe out with a beautiful ah. And so it is. Our prayers are always, always
take charge of what you're saying.
Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about one of those three taboos tonight. What are those three taboos we're always taught never to talk about?
Politics,
religion, and money. You'll hear me mention them again later. But when Mary and I talked months and months ago about my understanding of abundance and about what money really is, and about my experience in churches and money, where money is concerned, I haven't been in a church yet that feels really comfortable talking about money. And yet, it seems perfectly normal to me to talk about it, not because I love money and not because I have a lot of it, because I certainly don't, but because I think it's something that we live with in this society. And we need to feel comfortable with it in order to attract it into our lives and to then be able to use it in ways that help us help the world achieve what our goals are for this world. So abundance can't be described in a pie chart, and it can't be contained in a financial report. Money can, but abundance can't. And it isn't found in a mathematical equation. I learned more about the idea of abundance in a business law class than I ever learned in any economics class or finance class that I had. The seed of that learning was when I heard a professor say, "The root of many societal problems is the idea, the flawed idea, that we live in a zero-sum society." Anybody know what zero-sum means? I see a nod yes and several heads shaking no. Well, zero-sum is the idea that a gain for one side entails a loss for the other. Abundance doesn't subscribe to zero-sum. He went on to explain that when we believe in pie charts, we're doomed. Why? Because a pie chart, you don't know what a pie chart looks like. It looks like a pie, and then it's divided into slices according to how things are going to be apportioned. Because the pie chart is a clear, visible descriptor of divvying up some sum of anything, begins with a flawed premise, and that premise is that there is a limited amount of good, and I'm using the term good so that you can replace it with whatever you want to focus on. It could be money, could be love, could be ability, or wagons, or hay, or jobs, or food. The list is endless. The point is that we as humans, being in this world, often don't understand the limitlessness of the good that is available to us. And that's a bit of a problem for us. We so like to know, I mean really know. We want to be able to measure so we can apportion. If we believe we know how much there is of anything, we can tell if we're getting our fair share. But that attitude doesn't serve us when we believe there are really no limits. If there really is no limit to the good, that means we can release the notion of there's not enough. The word we can then choose is limitless or unlimited. The idea of a zero-sum society is that if I get some, you get less. And if you get some, there's less for me. But that's simply not true when you understand that we live in an abundant state. There's plenty for you and for me, and for you and you and you. So let's put on that whiteboard in our mind, for now, unlimited when we think of abundance. Now let's turn to what the definition of abundance is, because now we've got that first part about unlimited, but what are we really talking about when we talk about abundance? Well, I'll admit that before I started writing for tonight, I went to the dictionary. In fact, I went to more than one dictionary because I really wanted to see what was out there. I know what I think abundance means, but you know what that means. Well, I looked at several editions, and many of them referred to crops, an abundant crop. But the two that I liked the best, one was a plentiful amount. Plentiful. I like plentiful. And the other one was more than enough. That's very personal, isn't it? Because each of us knows what enough is, but nobody knows what the other person thinks enough is. So a plentiful amount or more than enough. We could add that to our whiteboard in our mind as well if we're trying to keep track of what we're talking about tonight. So having those two pieces of information about unlimited and what abundance means, what are your experiences of abundance? I want you to think about this, because this is not a one-way talk tonight. This is a two-way talk, although I may not actually hear your words. Do you have to work hard to remember abundance, a time when you felt abundant, or are you immediately drawn to a particular experience, or do you always feel abundant? What's your focus when you think about abundance? Is it money? Food? Is it that chocolate cake that you'd like to have a second, third, and fourth piece of? Maybe, I'm talking about things I'm familiar with. Maybe it's having enough space, personal space, or a space to worship in. Or maybe it has to do with material things. Maybe you have a whole list of things that would make you feel abundant. Or maybe it's love. Take a minute to think about your experience of what abundance is. And I mean really take a minute. I'm going to give you time. Responding to that question can be very telling about our lives. Those early memories are the place we begin to teach ourselves about the relationship between who we are and what we experience in our lives where abundance is concerned. What did you yearn for, or what do you yearn for? Whether in the past or present tense, take a moment to think about that question. What did you yearn for, or what do you yearn for now? There may be several things that come to mind right away. There may be a memory or just a sense about having plenty, or maybe your thoughts turn to scarcity. You see, we create our own understanding of the abundance in the universe, or lack of it, where we are personally concerned. It turns out abundance is, for the most part, an attitude. So put that one on the whiteboard too. My life is an abundance of love. It feels as though it almost always has been. My mother, father, grandmother, and sister made up my early nuclear family. There was always a lot of love between my mother and my father, and my mother and her mother who lived with us, and between the adults and the children in the family. I grew up with a sense that there was plenty of love in the world. And later in my life, I met my wonderful husband, Michael. He is the epitome of love, and I am the very willing recipient of his unconditional love. So I can honestly say I have an abundance of love in my life, and I enjoy sharing that love with others. It's what gives me a key to understanding what abundance really is. On the other hand, in my family, as I was growing up, we didn't all agree on where abundance was to be found. Although the five of us lived in a small post-World War II bungalow, I never felt our space was overcrowded, but my sister did, and that made our relationship complicated because she never got over having to share a small bedroom with me. That experience has shaped her life and our relationship for almost 8 decades. Now remember, I'm counting from 0 to 10. But it took me almost that long to understand that her criticisms and anger toward me on a daily basis had more to do with her lack of personal space as we grew up than with who I was as a person sharing that space. While I never felt there was a lack of personal space, she still experiences that feeling of lack. On the other hand, money was a different thing. I grew up knowing there wasn't enough. The funny thing was that I never really felt like we had to do without, and there was always more than enough food and clothes to wear and share and heat and lights and a home to return to each day and loving parents. Growing up with that much security was wonderful, but there was this thing about money that stuck to me and not to my sister. As a young adult, I experienced real fear about being able to pay the bills. In my book, Breathe Into Wisdom, I talk about coming to an understanding that even though through my fear and life's challenges, there would always be enough money. I thought that was a wonderful thing to know. And at one point, I heard someone say, "I pray like it all depends on God, and I work like it all depends on me." And that became my life's mantra, until I realized how incredibly limiting that kind of thinking is. If I believed there would always be enough, only enough, I would never experience abundance. I wouldn't let it into my life. I see how silly that was. I believed there was no limit to the amount of love in the world, but I just didn't know how to understand that there's an unlimited financial abundance available in the universe. Because I thought that money was man-made, and so how could it be unlimited? But I didn't understand the part about abundance, which is not. Yes, I know I'm moving into one of those last three taboos. Never talk about sex. Oh, maybe that wasn't one of them. How about religion or money or politics? But either way, money has always been on the taboo list in polite society. And I feel pretty comfortable, as I mentioned, about talking about money, and I hope you will too, if you don't already, because it helps you open up to the whole idea of financial abundance. After all, money really is nothing more than an exchange of energy. It is a shorthand way, an easy way, to place value, real or imagined, on an exchange of that energy. Gathering enough of that energy leads one to experience abundance. There are many other kinds of abundance besides financial, but that's the one that I'm talking about tonight. Attracting financial abundance found me unexpectedly. Part of my first full-time job was with the Michigan Capital Girl Scout Council, and among many other tasks, I was responsible for managing the Girl Scout Council's cookie sale. It's that time of year, you know. The first year we exceeded our monetary goal. The first year I was in charge, we exceeded our monetary goal, and I was thrilled. And to show you how complicated money is, I was told that I wasn't supposed to have met that goal and certainly not to have exceeded it like we did. Because if we did, the United Way wouldn't support us as fully as it would if we hadn't met our goal. They forgot to tell me that, and since I believe in doing a really good job, I was in trouble, but not serious trouble. Several years later, I was recruited to manage the Auburn Hills Boys and Girls Club Steak and Burger Dinner, where we raised $100,000 in one night on the floor of the Palace of Auburn Hills for that Boys and Girls Club. We served the kids' steak and the adults' burgers. And a good time was had by all, and we did that for 13 years. We didn't make as much money all those years, though. Then word started to get around that I knew how to raise money, which seemed like a real joke to me because I certainly didn't know how to raise it for myself. And one day, someone from the Troy church that I belonged to had an idea that we should hold a dinner dance with a live band to raise money. And we had a congregation about the size of this congregation. The members of our congregation could invite their friends to make up tables for an enjoyable evening of dining and dancing and conversation. And the proceeds would go toward paying off a debt that had been incurred. And the person who came up with the idea didn't feel like she could execute the idea, but she was sure I could. And she came to me and asked, and I reluctantly, and I mean reluctantly, agreed to chair the committee. I had no idea what I was doing. Long story short, the dance was a success and the bill was paid off. And all that did was pave the way for me then to be recruited to be the chair of a capital campaign committee, not once, but twice in the church. Now remember, all this time that I'm raising this money for all these different things, I'm not making very much money myself in my own work. So, two capital campaigns at the church in Troy. I arrived at the church in Lansing, the Unitarian Universalist Church in Lansing, walked in the back door, took one deep breath, and if you were ever in the building, you know what I'm talking about, and I said to my daughter, "This church is going to need a capital campaign pretty soon." She looked at me and smiled, knowing full well what I was in store for. And 5 months after I joined the church, I was chair of the capital campaign committee and told that we were to raise over $1 million. Well, that was way out of my league. Way out of my league. 16 weeks after we launched the capital campaign, we had raised $1 million, a little over $1 million, and I was shocked. Thrilled, but shocked. If you knew me well, you would know that although I have an MBA and owned my own business supporting my family for 20 years, we never really had more than just enough. And I mentioned that earlier, but boy howdy, I was good at raising and attracting abundance for others. I have a lot of nice thank you notes to prove it. But why couldn't I attract money for myself? Well, there are a number of answers to that question. First, although I hadn't noticed it, the universe had been giving me exactly what I have asked for my whole life. Remember what that was? You got it. Just enough. I've always had just enough. When I ask for something very special, like yearning to visit England, and 15 years later deciding I needed to fulfill a lifelong trip to Paris and Provence, those requests were generously met. I never stopped to ask, how could we do that when we always had only just enough? But when it came to my income, I must have been putting on the financial brakes. I really wanted to do for myself what I could for others, but I was clearly not asking the right questions or asking in the right way or understanding something. I had to find the right question to ask myself in order to discover how to tap into the feeling that I had financial abundance. And that question turned out to be, you ready? Do you feel you're worth it? And if not, why not? You see, all of those fundraisers were for organizations I highly valued, and I really wanted to help them achieve the goals that the money would provide. I was passionate about asking for them. And when I finally realized that my own sense of self-worth was pretty flimsy, I had some work to do. I'm still working on it, but it's much better than it was. What happened when I finally began to see with my soul and not with my physical eyes, I realized that I had been tapping into that unlimited abundance for my entire life. Remember what I said about all the ways my life was abundant? The only place I didn't experience abundance was financially. I believe that was because I wasn't ready to accept and receive it into my life. When I shifted my perspective, I realized I'd been attracting the abundance I felt I deserved. A vessel cannot be filled if there is a tight lid. It must be open to receiving. So no matter how hard I worked or what I wanted, unless I believed it was mine to have, that abundance would fall outside of my experience. Now here's the interesting part. It wasn't until I really believed that I was worthy to deserve financial abundance, I couldn't see that I was already experiencing it. And many, many times I actually pushed it away. People would offer to pay me or pay me more, and I'd say, no need. I believe the universe is always waiting to provide us with what we need, and I must have been a real disappointment to the universe when it came to finances. It wants to provide us with what we need and want and desire and experience to live our lives most abundantly. And once I really took notice, I realized the abundance I attracted was amazing, not just for others, but for myself as well. I just had to ask for and believe that I deserved it. And so might you with whatever it is that's escaping your grasp. Then I had to notice when abundance filled my life. And recently, I've been noticing abundance more and more. As I mentioned earlier, it has a lot to do with attitude. Part of that attitude adjustment was that I began to understand money is nothing more than an exchange of energy. Do you get that part? It's an exchange of energy. When we go to work for someone else, or when we do anything, if we're farmers and we grow crops, we've expended our energy to grow those crops, and we exchange them for money. The same is true for our daily work. The same is true, in fact, if we just make our money from investments. We have to make choices, and then we have to be patient and sit back and reap the benefits. Money is an exchange of energy. Because of certain life experiences, I was convinced I really didn't deserve financial abundance, and I thought I had to work hard for whatever I got. So I worked very hard, and I did good work, but the money didn't follow, at least not the way I thought it should. But remember that part about the lidded vessel being unable to receive? Well, I fit that description, and once I began to let a little light into myself and see that there is nothing magical about money, it felt like it began to flow much more freely. In our market economy, we use money to purchase goods and services, but our abundance comes from many sources. First, I had to remind myself that life is not a zero-sum game. If I receive something, it doesn't mean someone else is receiving less. There really is an unlimited amount. I'm not taking anything away from anyone. I could lose the guilt I might feel. Then I had to actually relax and begin to trust the universe to provide. If you can identify with any part of my story, maybe you too are a lidded vessel. What is it that you yearn for in an abundant life? What do you know that you deserve unconditionally? Maybe now it's time to pay attention to your own thoughts and words, because your thoughts and words are key to attracting your own abundance. Attitude is everything where abundance is concerned. If you say to yourself and others, "I can't afford it," or "I would love to, but..." probably it won't happen in this lifetime. You are standing in your own way, and I know because those are some of the phrases I used. But I'm learning that if I stand in my own way by doubting possibility, the doubt wins, and I need to go back and relearn that my own self-worth dictates what I believe is my right and truly possible. You may have even seen some examples of this idea that self-worth often dictates what we receive. Now, this is going to sound a little counterintuitive, because I'm going to mention that you ask you to think about people who grew up with nothing. No love, no support, not enough food, maybe no extra clothes, no shelter, and little or no education. Many of these people do not live abundantly, but some do live life abundantly. They don't believe their circumstances predict their possibilities. Somewhere deep inside, they know they are worthy of receiving, and sometimes it takes a long time for them to find a way to believe that about themselves. But when they do, we hear about it. I'm currently working with a woman who is in danger of losing her home next month for taxes. 8 weeks ago, she had no hope. I've known her for 4 years, and in those 4 years, she's always been concerned about this situation that she's experiencing. In fact, when she was early retired from MSU, she took her entire lump sum payment and used it to pay cash for her house, used up almost all of her retirement money doing that because she never wanted to be homeless. And now she's facing that. 8 weeks ago, she had no hope, and in the past 8 weeks, she's been introduced to a program that the state has to help people in her situation pay back taxes for qualified homeowners who've gotten behind. She learned about it from a county clerk who is notorious for not being sympathetic to such cases, but the county clerk actually called her back with this idea after 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. She's been very proactive in helping with this case, and at the same time, after 18 months of trying to have Social Security return money that was withdrawn from her disability check in error, she walked into the Social Security office one day, and I know this because I was with her, and was told, "It's okay, you've already done more than enough, more than anyone should have to do, and your money will be returned within 10 days. 18 months, all of a sudden, one short conversation. 10 days later, sure enough, she received the entire refund. Then she called the IRS. She was feeling so good about things because when she took the money out of her retirement account, she didn't know that she had to pay taxes on the early withdrawal, and she owes the IRS $55,000. So she called the IRS, and after apologizing for making the errors and taking the blame for her problems, an IRS employee she was speaking with actually said to her, "Let's stop there. Start on a more positive note." Can you believe that? The IRS. "I think I can help you." So, yep, the IRS, the county clerk, Social Security. Have you ever battled with any one of those things? Well, she was on a roll. Now, this is a woman whose mother tried to kill her 3 times before she was 12 years old. She's never had anybody stand in her corner. So she's doing pretty well. And that's what I mean about someone who hasn't had anything, but suddenly abundance is coming, but not in the guise that any of us would ever expect, in a way that allows her to maintain her dignity and still understand that she's working with an emotional disability that prevents her from really working to earn the money that she needs to live. So, we don't know yet if the help from the state program will come soon enough for her to avoid losing her house for taxes. But the state employee she is working with has given her pretty solid hope that she will be eligible for this one-time grace. And she knows she's got her money organized now so that she'll be able to continue on after that. She just has to get out of the hole. To me, that is abundance coming in many disguises. For this woman to finally believe she is worth it is a miracle. Watching this whole process take place over the past 8 weeks has been amazing. She's creating a reality she didn't even know existed, but she knows it now. Now, it's important to understand that everyone has a different idea of what abundance is. You might not want to live like this woman, and you certainly wouldn't feel like you were in an abundant situation, but she does. That's what I mean when I say that abundance is really nothing more than our attitude. So we have to be open to possibility because abundance often arrives in disguise. This brings up the third thing I want to share with you this evening. Be open to possibility and be prepared for the unexpected. We don't always receive abundant gifts in the packaging we expect. Sometimes it comes in unusual ways. For example, the abundance you might be expecting to be in a raise will instead first appear in a job loss. How does that work? Well, you lose your job, and then you talk to somebody, and that somebody talks to somebody else who has a real need for what you have to offer, and suddenly you have a new job at a higher wage. It's tough to go through that. It's tough to believe that there will be abundance at the end of it, but there can be. It may not be easy. You may have to sell a house and move. That's a lot of work. It's not as easy as having your boss give you the raise that you thought you might get. And it will certainly be accompanied by fear. But it might be the next step on your life path that will lead you to an amazing new career. Remain open to possibility. The universe doesn't provide a rule book and clear maps, nor does it provide a clock and a calendar so that you know exactly how long you have to wait. But what has become clear is that patience is sometimes required to enjoy the unlimited good that is waiting for us. Being in an energetic vibration that allows us to receive means we must practice releasing fear that something good might not come and instead practice the energy of what it feels like to have already received that thing or something better. I know what it feels like because when we begin a fundraising project, I know we will reach or exceed that goal. In fact, I asked every member on any committee that I had up, do you believe, really believe, that we can reach this goal? And I ask each person individually. It's not the kind of thing where I say, okay, do you all believe it? No, I look each person in the eye and I say, do you believe this is possible? And I haven't had anybody tell me no. I haven't had anybody leave a committee. And at the end, in fact, today, I experienced watching a person whom I was told had never said yes to anything like that actually report to the church as financial secretary that not only we're now in the new church, you may or may not know that, but we've been in the church since June, he actually said, I have great confidence that not only will the 30% increase in our membership that's been happening week over week since we moved into the new building, but that those people will join and will also be giving, and that will help us support this new building. So suddenly, this person who didn't ever believe that abundance was possible seems to be preaching it. I love that kind of a conversion. So I'm helping all of us raise our vibrational energy to a higher level of belief, and I hope I'm bringing you along as well. In addition, I've learned never to ask donors for a certain amount of money, but instead invite the giver to decide what is the value that is right for them to offer. My most successful example of this was when I suggested to a person selling a building as part of a fundraising effort not to list a price. This was a real estate transaction, and I knew I was taking a risk when I was asking this person to do this. But she was in hook, line, and sinker, and so she wouldn't tell anybody what the price was, and she asked people who were inquiring what they thought the value would be to them. And so we had the price in mind of $495,000. The building sold for $950,000. When I was told by a professional fundraiser to meet privately with potential large donors and ask them to donate $60,000, I simply nodded, thanked them for the breakfast they offered, and went on my way. I never asked for a particular amount from anyone, but we received donations at the $100,000 level, $50,000, $40,000, $35,000, all the way down to $5 and $1 from people who desperately wanted to be included. Now that's the abundant universe in action. If you're willing, I would invite you to close your eyes one more time this evening and bow your head as we begin to breathe into spirit. Breathe slowly in through your nose and blow gently out through your mouth. Continue to breathe in a little more deeply each time until you are comfortable and at ease. Imagine you are in your safest place, comfortable and relaxed. You can ask the universe for anything good. Keep breathing. What would it be? How can you imagine it would change your life, make your life better, help someone else, or make other lives easier? Now, what would it feel like to have that request granted? Imagine how that feels. Relax into that feeling. And imagine you received even more than you expected or requested. Breathe in. Breathe out. Hold on to that contentment, to the relief or joy or excitement or disbelief that you felt. Live right into what it feels like to peacefully, easily, lovingly, gently receive this abundance into your own life. Be completely aware of this feeling in this moment, of knowing that this gift is yours already. Lock this moment, this feeling, this energy you feel into your body and your mind and your spirit and your soul so that you will be able to recall it as often as you like. Keep breathing. The gift is yours over all time and space, knowing that you will not know when it will come to you, accepting that you do not know what it will look like or how it will manifest in your life. Keep breathing. Now, as we move back into the present moment, holding that energy of receiving, you may wiggle your hands and your feet as you feel it's right to do. Open your eyes as you are ready, and know that the abundant universe is prepared to share limitless abundance with you. As you go back out into the world, stay aware. Be alert to the amazing ways in which the universe tries to share her abundance with you through your relationships, through nature, through kindness and love, through unexpected gifts that may appear to be challenges that lead you to follow your life's path. Trust that it will be there for you over the next hour or two. Hold on to that energy you experienced and practice feeling it until you can sustain it. Feel it throughout the coming days and manifest it before you go to sleep and when you wake up. The wealth, in whatever form it takes, is already yours. You have unconditional access to the wisdom of the universe. You just sang about it and its abundance. Watch the evidence as it appears in your life and remember to be open to possibility. And I encourage all of us to practice living an abundant life every day. Being open is a practice, and so it is.
I just want to say that this all started because we needed a three-ring binder for some music that wouldn't stand up under the piano. So we changed songs. Work that up, and then Susan, you had the audacity to give this great talk and inspire Doug on a song that he wrote, so we're going to sing this without practice. Dare to dream of a thousand things you've never done before. Dare to know that they all are possible and
dare to love yourself, dare to do.